This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Joining us in a little over an hour from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, our good friend Jeremy Rutherford is going to join us to talk about the St. Louis Blues. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. The laughing voice you hear is my good friend Richard Pollock, also joining us in studio, Ezra Ginsberg, and producer Michael Remus when he's awake. And in case you're wondering what that means, you can go check us out on Twitter at Legal Curve, and you can see Remus's hard at work preparing for the NHL Midweek show.
A lot of theories circulating on Twitter as to why Remus has been up late. If you have any theories as to why Remus was found sleeping in the production room, please tweet them in at Illegal Curve, and we can read them on air.
We're going to throw Remus under the bus for this, probably for the next 2 hours, but it is worth noting, in his defense, he was off the clock.
Yes, he was off the clock. Yeah.
So, I mean, he was not, you know, doing this on, he was doing this on his own personal time, so that's I have no fault for that. No fault can be attributed to him for that, but he was sound asleep for at least a good 20 minutes.
Can I just defend myself on air while you guys are throwing me under the bus here?
Sure.
Okay, I do the warm up with Huss, and then I have a a little bit of a break, and then I do this show. So I can either
not for too much longer. You're not going to be.
Oh my god! I can either go home and do that, or watch baseball and take a bit of a nap, or I can skip the whole drive part and just do it here. So I lean back on the chair and watch baseball and take a bit of a nap. Look, I've been doing that at home in between the shows for the last 2 weeks, so sorry I did it.
Why are you so tired? That's the question. It's not a matter of whether you're sleeping. We know you're sleeping, but why are you so tired?
I have a theory.
Okay. Drew, why don't you give us your opinion?
I'll tell you what. Gary Lawless just sent out that theory. And all I can say is I'll just retweet this from the Illegal Curve
Twitter
account.
Can you please inform me what he said?
All Gary said is hashtag Leah.
Ooh, hashtag Leah.
Oh my god, you guys.
I suspect this is going to be an ongoing theme throughout the whole 2 hours tonight. But let's get started with last night's Jets-Habs game. I think it's only fitting that we start talking about the game a few minutes into the start of the show, because the Jets didn't show up until about the 10-minute mark of last night's game.
Well played.
Before you knew it, it was all over.
Well played. It was a disaster, Drew, and we were just talking about it between shows there, between Hassler and Lawless and our show. With Hassler, the start was just so slow, and when you dig yourself a hole like that, it's so hard to get out of it. Against any team in the NHL, poor defensively or not poor defensively, and the Habs with their speed can take away room very easily. And the Jets, it was essentially a game of keep away out there, and especially for the seam passes. You hear Noel talk about after the game, the East-West game. Well, they were just dominating that East-West game, and you shouldn't be able to do that consistently for like that 10-minute period like the Habs were doing. And the problem is you talk about building positives out of it, better second and third periods. When you're down 2-0, and by the way, I'll say that I think had Pacioretty not got hurt, it might have been worse, because their lines were all mixed up a bit. And Pacioretty looked pretty good in the early going.
He looked pretty injured right afterwards, though.
That's true.
But had he not heard anything on that front.
Had he not gotten hurt, I think it might have been worse. And the Jets have to, Claude Noel is in early part of the season. They're 3-4. He's got to keep a positive attitude. I understand that. He may be saying one thing to the media and a different thing to the players. But at some point, it's not too early anymore. And at some point, these starts are inexcusable. I'd say that point we've already passed that point.
At the start, we've talked about the start and when the schedule came out, and we said that the Jets at best we thought the Jets had to go 7-3. That's off the table, obviously, now.
Yeah.
If the Jets can salvage 5-5.
6-4, I still, I know it's obviously going to be difficult. We kind of said 7-3 is what they really should be shooting for, obviously, realistically. And then 6-4 is what they kind of have to do with 8-10 at home against not the best teams. You got to kind of finish at least 6-4. Yeah, 5-5, Drew, puts you in a hole because then you start traveling, and then Chicago comes to town, Ezzy, and Detroit comes to town. That first week of November, Chicago, Detroit come to town. Mm-hmm. And those are two tough teams.
Well, that's big boy games.
Absolutely. The game, we were making the comment after the first couple minutes that the Canadians had the Jets hemmed in their zone and they were absolutely controlling the play. That game was over quickly. When you have a team that's on a Western Conference road trip, mm-hmm. and they're at the tail end of it. It's been pretty successful. They had a good game in Vancouver, and they did a pretty good job on Roberto Luongo and the Vancouver Canucks. And that's all they really needed. P.K. Subban got the insurance marker, and the empty netter really was not extremely relevant in the grand scheme of things. That was a good road game, and the Habs after the game were talking about how Carey Price really stole the game, and I thought he played excellent, and I thought that at certain points of the game, the Jets looked intimidated. Carey Price is a top goaltender in the NHL, and I know that there are other goaltenders that are struggling around the mm-hmm. NHL, like Henrik Lundqvist and Pekka Rinne. Jonathan Quick has been struggling. But Carey Price made a lot of saves look easy, and a lot of times the Jets didn't make it difficult on him. And they had the chances. Andrew Ladd had a very good chance. Frolik had a good chance. You guys remember Jacob Trouba also had a good mm-hmm. chance. But that game was really determined in those first 2 minutes, and we've talked about it a lot early on here over the first 2 weeks, that the Jets need quick starts and good starts, and unfortunately, they weren't able to build on that win over the Devils. And, you know, you talk about 7-3 and 6-4, and I wouldn't disagree with that. They have three tough games coming up. I guess you could say that, you know, Washington's struggling and Nashville isn't as good as St. Louis, but you have to win mm-hmm. two of those three games to make up for the Dallas and New Jersey games.
And you're getting St. Louis, we talked about it before the show, Drew, on a back-to-back after Chicago. So not so much the back-to-back factor because St. Louis is so deep, 1-6 and 1-12 at forward, and they got three goalies really who can play. But the emotion of a Chicago game vis-a-vis the emotion of a Jets game.
Sure, the physicality.
Although, yeah. You know, to interrupt, they have Ryan Reeves, Alex Steen, you know, Winnipeg boys. So, I mean, that can lift you up a bit too, right?
Absolutely. But, you know... I don't want to talk about the blame for the Jets' poor start because in my mind, it falls on the players no matter what. I mean, you can say it's the coach's fault, and the coach obviously will get blamed at the end of the day. But to me, it's always the player's fault. So let me ask this question. What can the Jets do to mitigate that, to get better at the start of their games? Is there anything that they can do aside from just effort?
This is not a magic potion here. And I don't know if it's the pregame routine. I don't know what it is. I don't think so, really. I mean, we're not in that room, so we don't know. But it's a matter of leadership, and it's a matter of, we talked about this last week, and it's a matter of coming out and just performing and showing a passion. I think physicality goes a long way with that. Again, very weak game physically for this team. And the Habs, you know, the Habs are a skating team that's not physical. So what you did is you played into their game. We talked about this, you know, yesterday. You played into the game because the Habs says they can skate and they don't hit. The Jets can skate, but not as well as the Habs, and the Jets really don't hit. So who's going to have the advantage there? And they didn't change that at all in the game. You know, if you watch the Habs last year, what they have trouble with? Trouble with the cycle down low, trouble with bigger forwards, and taking away space from them. What did the Jets do yesterday? They kind of traded chances a bit for a while there. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, not trading at the beginning, but even the idea of the flow of the game back and forth. Who's that going to benefit? Well, it's going to benefit the team that has more talent, and that's Montreal.
Sure. The Jets didn't – I wasn't in the press box for last night's game. I was in my seats. So, and you get a different vantage point. And there was nothing going on, you know – on the instances when the Jets had the puck in Montreal's zone and could work the boards and work the cycle, they didn't do it to any great degree that said, boy, they're really dominating the Habs at any degree.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, if you look at it from the perspective of, okay, so the Habs go and they're playing their cycle game and they're doing it with some serious talent. You know, even smaller guys like Galchenyuk and Gallagher, those guys are skating well, moving the puck well, and whoever, you know, they kind of mix up the lines a little bit with Pacioretty out and Bork moving up. But the idea is all those guys can skate, move the puck. So when you're getting to the different lines and the lack of maybe passing ability of some of the Jets players, that hurts you, right? Like, can you do the cycle game, Ezzy, with Setoguchi, with Kane, and with some of those guys on different lines, Jokinen, when they're really not great passers? It's tough. Mm-hmm. So is the Jets game conducive to that? Well, not necessarily. Then you have to focus on the fact that you're playing against Carey Price, who everybody's been saying he looked in control, and he absolutely looked in control.
Well, I mean,
part of that is the lack of traffic in front.
Yeah, you're not going to beat him.
I could take something from Brendan Gallagher, as he talked about him on Saturday's show. Where was Brendan Gallagher last night in the power play? 5'7" or 5'8", smack dab in the middle of the front of the net. You know, is anybody paying the price like that for the Jets? And you don't even pay the price as much in front anymore, but you still have to go there.
Sure, you have to at least make it difficult for the shot to. I mean, Carey Price was. I mean, yeah, the Jets outshot them, but again, look at the quality. I know it's meaningless. Look at the quality of those shots. A lot of the shots, you know, come in over the blue line and take a wrist shot, and I mean, Carey Price is going to eat those up every day.
And when you're protecting a lead, you don't care if you give up shots. So.
Right, you're protecting a lead. You just don't want to give up good scoring chances. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, yeah, you know, maybe in the second period, the Jets had some good goal-mouth scrambles where they were close to putting it in. But you're asking a lot of a team that is average in talent to come back from being down 2 goals against one of the best goaltenders in the NHL. You're just not going to be long-term successful with that strategy.
You know, if you look at it, it's these bad starts, right? You're getting off to bad starts. You're getting killed by Dallas at home. You don't bring much against Mini. You have a poor performance against Montreal. Doesn't that not fall back at the end of the day to leadership, to being in the game when it matters? You know, Claude Noel talks about the second and third periods are something to build on. That's garbage because the NHL with the crossovers, with basically the three teams in each division and the crossovers, every point's so important. As it was last year, maybe more important.
Mm-hmm. And it's one thing if that continues from game to game. Oh, well, we built on a good third period and it contributed to a great first period in the next game. But that's nonsense. It's been disproven time and time again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, Drew. But like, it's more important, I think, this year than last year. I'm going to clarify that because of the division they're in. Sure. Last year, you had Florida, Tampa, Washington struggling. Carolina. So this year, you know, look at Colorado.
Yeah, a team that you thought you would be competing with for the playoff spot.
Colorado, Chicago, St. Louis, Minnesota right now all look heads and tails better than the Jets. That's only in their own division. Mm-hmm. And so it's early. It's 7-8 games in. But you get down 4 points. You get down 6 points. You play a couple in intra-division matchups. You lose those. You don't want to be chasing all year. And then, because then you get desperate. Then every game's a must-win starting in January. And then you're in trouble.
I felt yesterday's game was different in the Dallas game in that I thought the compete level was better, and they have 4 goals in their last 4 games, the Jets do. So are you going to win a lot of games when you score 1 goal a game? Probably not. And
one of those is empty netter.
And you talk about, you know, the quality of shots, and I would tend to agree that if you broke down the 35 or 40 shots that they had yesterday, the good quality scoring chances were probably 2 or 3. I mentioned the Andrew Ladd goal. And it's a funny thing when you're having trouble scoring goals. And I thought Mark Scheifele was the best forward yesterday. And there were other guys that had decent games. You couldn't really pinpoint one or two players that had particularly bad games. They were having trouble. And, you know, Noel continues to line juggle. And he's had limited success. And when you look down the bench, you need at least one or two guys to be contributing offensively, if not the whole team. A team like the San Jose Sharks or the Colorado Avalanche right now, they're getting offense from all 3 lines, sometimes all 4 lines, and the Jets aren't getting that right now. And is it a lack of confidence? Is it a lack of preparation? Is it leadership? I certainly don't know the answer to that. To me, yesterday's game, last night's game, was not about the lack of effort. The start was bad. And you'd like to see maybe a couple of guys get hit and you take the puck and you get it out of their zone. But Montreal was so dominant in that zone. And right now, some guys have to step up offensively. And it can't always be Evander Kane or Andrew Ladd. And it certainly wasn't yesterday. But, I mean, they have 4 goals in their last 4 games. I mean, it's clear that whatever lines Claude Noel is putting out there, they're not working.
Big money was handed out this past offseason to Brian Little, Blake Wheeler, and Zach Bogosian. Can throw Grant Clifton in there, not so much for big money as for term. And are all 4 of those guys putting undue pressure on themselves? That has to be asked. And whose fault is that?
Let's talk about that, and let's talk about leadership after the break. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. This is NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Los Angeles Dodgers victorious in Game 5 of the NLCS, heading back to St. Louis for Game 6. Down 3-2, a little dicey in the bottom of the, or pardon me, the top of the ninth, but the Dodgers managed to pull it off, so they're extending the NLCS back to St. Louis. Couple of items coming into us. Good friend of the show, Robin Short from the St. John's Telegram, reporting that it's expected that Patrice Cormier will be recalled to the Winnipeg Jets from the St. John's Ice Caps on Thursday. That's to take the place of Evander Kane, who, as everybody knows, was banged up at Jets practice. We don't know the extent to which Evander Kane was injured, but Robin Short reporting that it's a good chance Patrice Cormier will be back on his way to Winnipeg. And I don't think I need to tell our audience that Patrice Cormier is no replacement for Evander Kane. Another item, Lou Korak. He covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. Reporting Brian Elliott going to get the start in Winnipeg on Friday night.
That's the plan as of now.
That's the plan as of now.
I mean, if Halak gets pulled, then maybe that'll change. But as of now, you're going to see Elliott here on Friday.
That's right. You'd see Yaroslav Halak for the Blues in Chicago on Thursday, and then Brian Elliott here in Winnipeg on Friday. That's the plan. We were talking before the break about leadership. And our friend Gary Lawless, of course, wrote a column today in the paper saying that this is now Bogosian and Kane's team. You know, to paraphrase the column, of course. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that? And more so, do you think that it's time for it to become, you know, Evander Kane's team and Zach Bogosian's team more so than Andrew Ladd's team as it has been for the first couple of years? Or can the three of them work together in driving the leadership of this team?
I always hate when you put a team on one guy's back. Maybe Richie will disagree with me, but it's a team. It's a collective team effort. And sure, one guy wears the C on his chest, and he's the guy that everybody looks to, and he's the guy that talks to the ref. But as far as I'm concerned, it's not just Andrew Ladd. And right off the bat, Zach Bogosian and Evander Kane each have long-term contracts. They're a big part of the core of this team. So obviously they're going to bear the responsibility of some of the leadership. And Bogosian's 23 years old, and Evander Kane is 22 years old. And sure, they're still young, but these are two of the best players on the team. Bogos and Trouba are paired up together, and they're playing very well. You could argue that that's really the top D pairing for the Jets. And to me, to put it in a situation, the context of that, Ladd versus Kane and Bogosian, I guess would... what you're trying to say is that one guy is really responsible for the direction of the team, mm-hmm. and all of that. So I agree with Gary in that Evander Kane and Bogosian are key elements of this team, as they have been since the first Jet season. But if the implication is that one of those two guys should be wearing the C over Ladd,
I don't think that was his implication. I think it's just sort of, you know, sometimes these things, you know, transition on the ice to where the, you know, the best players. And I mean, I don't think I'm speaking out of school when I say Evander Kane has more natural God-given talent than Andrew Ladd. And so maybe it's time, maybe he's
but
harnessing.
But natural God-given talent doesn't give you leadership ability. And I think the issue is Kane plays hard. And I think Gary touched on that in the article, in the middle of the article, in terms of Evander Kane is always, if you see him, he skates hard in the neutral zone, he skates hard in the offensive zone, he skates hard in the defensive zone. Now, he skates hard and he plays hard and he trains hard as far as we can tell, and he's in good shape. So all those things are a factor, but all those things don't make you a good leader.
Right.
Or a leader, period. Never mind a good leader. Zach Bogosian can do a lot of really good things, but I'm not sure if it makes him a leader. I mean, he definitely took steps to being a leader last year with his fights and his tough play. So far this year, his play hasn't been leadership quality. It just hasn't been. His effort level, I agree more so on the Bogosian leader thing than I do on the Kane, because I just don't see the respect for Kane from the Jets players.
I think Kane's maturing, but I don't know if he's necessarily a leader on this team.
Yeah, I mean, I see the respect for his ability, and I see the respect for his passion. I don't know if I see the respect for his leadership ability. And that's a big thing. You know, do you have to respect that leader? Bogosian taking steps in that regard. But I think overall, Andrew Ladd's still the leader based on a variety of factors, his performance, but I think most of all the Stanley Cup success that he's had with the two cups. But when you really think about it, guys, the problem we mentioned is the lack of leadership. And if Andrew Ladd's the leader, then who else is the leader? And if it is Kane and Bogosian, I'm concerned as a Jets fan if that's the case.
Let's throw it out there right now. Olli Jokinen wears an A on his jersey. And he was brought in two summers ago because he was a big option at second line center and because he brings the experience from Calgary and Florida. He, to me, does not lead by example on the ice. And he's an easy target. And he's been an easy target since last year. What has he deserved over other players to wear an A? And in that respect, I mean, the core of this team, everybody knows the core of this team, Ladd, Little, Wheeler, Kane, Bogo, Enstrom. If you want to throw Pavlik in there as well, and I think you should throw Pavlik in there. He has a long-term contract. That's the core of the team. And Olli Jokinen, I think, stayed here during the lockout, and he was here with his family, and I think he has a good intentions. But right now, he's hurting this team big time. Olli Jokinen really doesn't bring anything to the table. And you can say that he brings leadership and size and offense, but you know, 14 points last year, is that bringing a lot of offense? And again, I don't think that he's a bad guy or he hasn't had a good career. But I think on this team, you're putting him out at second line or third line center, and on many nights, he doesn't do anything.
He just doesn't. I mean, but I don't think that's because he doesn't want to do anything. I just don't think he physically can do it anymore. I mean, some players just reach the end of their career and they don't necessarily fade away gently into the night. Some guys just fall right off of a cliff. And right. I think in the case of Olli Jokinen, for better or worse, and I mean, like you said, no disrespect, I think he's just fallen off of that talent cliff.
Right.
I don't think he leaves Winnipeg after the season and all of a sudden recaptures anything. I think maybe he has another year somewhere just on spec and on name reputation, but that's about it.
Yeah, I agree with Ezzy. I mean, you know, what's the A for, right? And who's wearing the A's and do you... That's a really good point in the sense that we talked... I think you mentioned it last night, Ezzy, during the game. Does the value of the A then become discounted based on who's wearing it?
Right, and in that respect, Gary has a point there. Who are the guys that you know that are going to go out there and get your team back in the game? It is the Andrew Ladds, it's the Evander Kane, it's the Bogos, and, you know, we made this point. Bogo is still finding his way. He hasn't quite mastered his offensive game yet, and I said that quite a bit last year. I think his real value is in his defensive game. He's aggressive, and he's obviously an amazing skater, but still he hasn't quite given you signs that he's going to really become more than a 30-point defenseman. But in that respect, Olli Jokinen, you when he goes out there, you don't... His play just hasn't reflected a guy that's going to get you the big goal or set up the big play. And again, I'm not picking on the guy because I think he's a nice person and I think his intentions are well. But right now, you know, he's just gone through so many scoring slumps over the last, let's say, you know, half year and
it's not
seven
a slump
games.
Anymore, as he just can't score.
It's just the way he is. I mean, I would agree with you. I don't see the value in keeping him as an assistant captain when, and I mean, I think we might put a little too much stock in the A and the C and all that.
I don't, by the way. People keep mentioning, this is a new catchphrase. People keep talking about, like, there's a new trend of all, like, oh, there's no leader. You know, the A and the C doesn't mean anything.
Well, I think it means something. I don't think it's the be all and end all.
Anybody can talk to the ref.
Right.
Like, it's a matter of
how on the ice. It's in the dressing room.
It's in the room. It's on the bench.
Yeah.
You know, coaches know who leads the team. So C's and A's actually mean quite a lot. So you can look at it as two ways. One is, Noel gave Jokinen an A based on experience last year and doesn't want to disrespect the veteran, which is very true, even based on Burmistrov last year and Jokinen. Both didn't play well, but, you know, he didn't want to make, as you heard Burmistrov's comments, you know, not disrespect Jokinen. And I understand deferring to the veteran in a sense. At some point, you might not have to anymore, or you may be forced not to. The idea is, he gives it to him, and is the other one Stewart?
I think it's Stewart, yeah.
So, I mean, the idea is, it's hard to take it away from the guys once you give it to them. So unless they leave, and the other you know, elephant in the room is whether or not he should have been bought out in the summer anyhow. But that's for another day. But the idea is once you give it to the veteran, Noel doesn't want to disrespect him. So if he doesn't want to disrespect him, you could always hand out a third A. There's lots of teams with three A's, but he hasn't handed it out. So has he not handed it out? because he doesn't want to put more pressure on Blake Wheeler, for example? Has he not handed it out because he doesn't want to put more pressure on Zach Bogosian or Evander Kane? Or has he not handed it out because he does not think anybody deserves it?
I think those are very valid points you've made, and the only time will tell to see how this situation unfolds. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the 10-game suspension handed down to Patrick Kaleta, and we're going to talk about Max Lapierre's hit on Dan Boyle. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Still to come here on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Jeremy Rutherford, a good friend from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, he's going to join us in about 40 minutes' time. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve is the Facebook page and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news, including all your Evander Kane injury news, is www.illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, scary scene last night between the San Jose Sharks and the St. Louis Blues. We'll start with that dangerous hit. Max Lapierre leveled onto Dan Boyle. Lapierre was offered an in-person hearing, so that can immediately tell you that it's going to be a significant suspension, probably at least 5 games. Fortunately, Dan Boyle is feeling okay today after being stretchered off the ice. And that's the most important news of it all, is that an incident that he did not appear to be moving his extremities at first. Sounds like another bullet dodged by the NHL. I think everybody would agree that Max Lapierre is a bit of a rat on the ice.
Absolutely. That's why they brought him in.
Yeah, they brought him in to be a rat, and he is a rat on the ice. For better or worse, he's actually not considered a repeat offender in the eyes of the NHL, given that it's been longer than 18 months since his last suspension. What do you think is an appropriate number of games for Max Lapierre, given his hit last night on Dan Boyle? Ezzy, I'll start with you.
Well, I'll tell you what I would like him to get and then what I think he'll probably get. I think he should get 10 games. And, that whole notion that he's not a repeat offender because he hasn't been suspended in the last 18 months is BS. He's been suspended before. I'm not saying that you bringing that up is BS. I'm saying that in the decision-making process, it's BS. It was an extremely dirty hit on an extremely good defenseman, a defenseman that has a very good chance at making the 2014 Canadian Olympic team. He has no regard for the position of the defenseman. And he's a guy that has run around and could have easily been suspended many times. And this is what I want out of hockey, and this is what the NHL wants out of hockey. But based on precedent, he'll probably get 4 to 6 games. And I know you want to get into this after, but I think Kaleta should have gotten around 20 to 25. Instead, he got 10. And you see 10, and it hurts him. But you really want to scare people from doing this stuff again. And fighting, okay, what happened in the USHL was extremely scary for those who didn't see it. When you have a player convulsing on the ice, he's okay, by the way. And that's extremely scary. But, and this has been said before on the station today, Dan Boyle could have easily broken his neck. And he didn't break his neck. And it looks like he's going to be fine in terms of not having a serious spinal injury or something like that. And it's always the what if. And, the fighting, I think the two incidences that have happened here early in the season, that being George Parros, and I forget the name of the kid in the USHL, but that was really scary. I was telling that to Richie last night. It happened a couple days ago. When stuff like that happens,
His name is Dylan Chanter.
Dylan Chanter.
The Dubuque Fighting Saints, right, of the USHL.
Stuff like this happens. I do think it is time for change. And these examples, because, we talk about it all the time on the show and on the station, and we talk about 6 games, 10 games. Come on, give the guy 20 games. Give the guy 25 games. Make him sit out a quarter of the season and really feel it. Lapierre has been a dirty player since the Montreal Canadiens days, and he actually has some talent. But the guy has to learn how to use it. And Matt Cook was quoted as saying that he went up to Patrick Coletta and said that if you want to, they don't know each other, and if you want to talk to me, I can tell you about my experiences. These guys won't learn it unless it happens the hard way. So he'll probably get six games, and he should get 20, in my opinion.
You watch Lapierre hit a bunch of times, and I've watched it over and over, and you know, Boyle goes to get the puck, and the easy play is just to fire up the strong side boards, and he curls back. Lapierre goes at him. What you're supposed to do, now there's two ways. He should be suspended. I'm going to qualify it. But a lot of those defensemen now turn away into the boards to draw the penalty or to avoid being hit, and that's really not what you're supposed to be doing. Put you into a vulnerable position.
Yeah.
Having said that, Lapierre was not coming with absolutely ton of speed. He was coming with speed, but not a ton, and he's supposed to wait for Boyle, in reality, to shoulder up and then hit him, or grab him and put him against the board, which is a safe way. He follows through on the hit and then hits his head right into the part where the boards turns into the glass. Based on the fact that he has, and as he mentions, the 18 months, the probation, all that stuff, his reputation and the way he plays should factor into this. I think he should get 7 to 8 games, and I think he'll probably get five maybe.
Well, five is what the NHL allows for once you have the in-person hearing. Yeah.
And you know what? Repeat offender. Why did St. Louis bring him in? To stir things up? Come on. That's why they bring him in. The guy doesn't contribute like he did in Montreal years ago. Been to Vancouver, been to Anaheim. This is clearly dispensable. And this is what he is. And so when he does a stupid thing, don't act surprised.
And Richie, I think Shanny's doing a good job, but he's just acting the way, or not acting, but he's making decisions within limits. And
I'll tell you the biggest problem with Shanny.
He can't just throw out 20 or 25 games. And to me, it's not throwing that out. But why are we talking about this again and again and again? And I think the answer is because they don't give out big enough suspensions.
Right, but I think the biggest problem for Shanny is the PA.
The Players Association.
Because this is the PA's appealing. We're going to talk about Coletta. Might as well just transition into it now, Drew.
Please go.
The PA is appealing Patrick Coletta's 10-game suspension. Let me ask you something.
Why are they appealing that?
Jack Johnson's lucky he didn't get hurt and didn't miss any games.
Yeah.
Jack Johnson's out for 3 months. Do they appeal the suspension?
The NHLPA is never interested in the player who got injured. They're only interested in protecting the money of the player who did the
damage. The injured player
still
gets paid, and the player who's getting suspended doesn't get paid if he gets suspended.
Which is a very myopic way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. I mean, because, you know, what if Jack Johnson is in the final year of his contract and he gets... I mean, you can easily be out for 3 months with that kind of hit that Patrick Coletta leveled.
Like, he's not. You know, you might be susceptible to it based on a certain person might be more susceptible than others. But in any event, the point is this. The PA, my dad used to always say this, they don't police themselves. The PA, the players don't have any respect for themselves, and then the PA exacerbates the problem by appealing these suspensions.
Well, you listen to the comments that...
Go take a poll, have a meeting. I don't know how they do all this stuff. Why don't you take a meeting of all the players? Why don't you do an online vote? They're all on their phones all the time. Take an online vote of whether or not you think the hit was dirty and whether or not it should be appealed.
Well, I mean, everybody knows that it was a dirty hit.
From the players.
Oh, from the players.
Not from fans. From the players and the PA. Then hand down if decide whether or not you're going to appeal.
I mean, here's the comment from Joe Pavelski last night. Things like that happen, especially when idiots are idiots. He's referring, of course, to Max Lapierre. Dan's a world-class defenseman. There's straight numbers, i.e., he can hit him. He's going to hit him right from behind. There's guys in this league that will target that. It doesn't matter. They just go. It sucks.
That's right.
But, I mean, it's almost like...
But you're part of the same PA that goes out and appeals Patrick Coletta's suspension.
Well, that's just
so it's only if it's your guy.
Yeah. I mean,
speak out on everything. Don't be so scared.
I'd like to hear one of the St. Louis Blues guys. I mean, you know, Max Lapierre is probably going to be there for a year. And then next year he might go to another team. And next year he might run one of the St. Louis Blues guys. And they're not going to be so quick to defend him, or they're not going to be so quick to stand idly by as the Players Association appeals the suspension when he takes off some other guy's head, or when Patrick Coletta, you know, takes off another guy's head in Buffalo. It's amazing. I mean, you look at the team in Buffalo. I mean, you think somebody, and I'm sure they just don't do it out of solidarity. You know, they have no solidarity with Jack Johnson. They only have solidarity with Patrick Coletta, even though they're all part of the same Players Association, mm-hmm. and even though Patrick Coletta mm-hmm. on the ice is not the difference maker for the Buffalo Sabres one way or the other in terms of winning a game.
That's right.
Drew, I think you have something, I don't know what the proper word is, if it's a boiling point, if that's the word, but look at the two incidences. You have Dan Boyle and Jack Johnson, two, they're not just average defensemen, two really well-skating defensemen, and you have two guys that have horrible reputations for being dirty players. And it's not that they don't have skill. Maxime Lapierre, Patrick Kaleta, I think, is probably dirtier than Lapierre. Lapierre is not much better. But you almost have a tipping point here. There has to be a culture change here. And I'm the guy who defends fighting, even though I've said that. I think even the most hardcore pro-fighting advocates in the NHL want staged fighting out. And they want less of these injuries. But there has to be some type of culture change here, because the NHL comes out of the lockout and they've resolved all of their ownership problems. And this is what we're talking about. And
for this hour.
Trust me, I would love to be talking. I don't love talking about this. I would love to be talking about nice hits and nice goals and how good the San Jose Sharks are playing, how good the Colorado Avalanche are playing. Not coming on the show week after week talking about these guys. And a couple of years ago, it was Matt Cook, and Matt Cook has since changed his tune. But there's still other guys out there. Steve Ott last night was jumping around against the boards, pretending like he was getting hit from behind, and that's why he didn't draw a penalty, and the ref noticed it. You have guys out there, and Steve Ott's another guy who can put the puck in the net. He's a decent hockey player. But week after week, we're talking about this stuff, and these guys are getting injured. And I don't have the answers. Hockey is an extremely physical game, but this type of stuff, I mean, this type of stuff shouldn't be happening anymore. And I don't have the answers here, but it definitely couldn't hurt to be suspending these guys more.
Let me ask you guys this question regarding the appeal, the Patrick Kaleta appeal. The appeal goes to Gary Bettman, and then at which point in time they can then appeal to a neutral arbitrator. Can you ever foresee an instance where Gary Bettman, you know, lessens a suspension that
Bissonnette suspension?
That was a little bit different because it wasn't a suspension for an on-ice incident. It was a suspension for leaving for allegedly leaving the bench.
The game wasn't on TV.
In the fight, and there was no video of it. So I think that they sort of negotiated that.
But aside from that,
that wasn't like a Shanahan suspension.
I don't see. Yeah, that's fair enough. I don't see Bettman overruling. But then they're going to appeal it to a neutral
arbitrator.
Yeah, take it to the next level. Go ahead, because you're doing a disservice. Because the money in Patrick Kaleta's pocket means far less to the overall game than the well-being of the players, especially players of the quality of Jack Johnson and Dan Boyle.
Richie's point is 100% bang on. The NHLPA needs to start protecting the game. Of course they need to protect their players, but it can't... Again, the answer to this is so difficult because they look at it like 10 games, $200,000, whatever it is. Well, you know, a guy almost broke his neck, mm-hmm. and the game is not getting any more safe. And again, I think Shanny's in a difficult place. I don't think he's not doing a good job, but I don't know based on precedence, and they have to base it on something. There's, you know, legal ramifications. As Richie mentioned, the PA is going to appeal the suspension. The Kaleta suspension, because they look at it and they say, oh, 10 games is too much. Well, what if Johnson breaks his neck and can never play again?
Oh, Mark Sillard hasn't played a game of hockey in a long time.
Who are you protecting here? Like, and this has a trickle-down effect to minor hockey. And it's something that I'm just puzzled by, because look at these guys and I say, what's the point of this? Like, So Patrick Kaleta is going to lose all this money. I mean, nobody's going to sign this guy. I'll be shocked if anybody signs this guy afterwards. It's despicable, Kaleta.
His value has been. They'll tell you the value of Kaleta has been his ability to draw penalties. So
if he can keep doing that, there's always one team that seems to be willing to take a chance on a lot of these guys.
He's a Buffalo native too, so
local boy there. Yeah. Before we go to break, take this for what it's worth. Mitch Peacock, friend of ours, reporting that Evander Kane is attending the True North Foundation gala dinner tonight at the MTS Center. So take that for what it's worth. I don't know if you can read too much into it, but there you have the information.
Is Remus going?
The fundraising galas, they follow Remus around, I think, is how it works.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's go to break. You're listening to the NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We shift our attention over to the Western Conference basement dwellers, the Edmonton Oilers, 1-5-1 in their first 7 games. They score a fair bit, 21 goals, so 3 goals a game. Unfortunately, they give up a lot more, 32 goals, so over 4 goals a game, the goals against average for the Edmonton Oilers. Before we talk about the goalies, I want to talk about Nail Yakupov. Healthy scratched for the last 2 games, came back against Pittsburgh last night. You have any problem with Dallas Eakins healthy scratching Yakupov?
No, I was trying to send a message to him. I mean, the problem is probably in the construction of the roster. More so than in terms of Eakins is trying to send a message to his particular player. People are, oh, you know, he's a better player. He's a good player. Why you need to be more than one game? Well, you know, Yakupov's come out with some comments about not liking playing without the puck. I don't put too much emphasis on that. I think Eakins is trying to teach Yakupov a lesson in terms of what it's like to play in the NHL. You need to work hard. You need to pay your dues. And if you don't, you aren't just entitled to a spot in the roster. So I have no issue with it at all.
The comments you referred to, this is Yakupov on Monday morning to Edmonton reporters. I don't really like playing without the puck, skate all the time, and do forecheck and hit somebody every shift. I don't think it's my game. You know, with all due, you know, to be fair, there may have been some translation issues going on there because this is a guy who's not, yeah. English isn't his first language.
Right.
But, I mean, Ezzie, do you have a problem with the Yakupov benching? And are you concerned about his long-term development in Edmonton?
Absolutely not. He didn't have any points in the first 4 games. And, you know, newsflash to Yakupov, you're going to have to do that for any coach that you play for in the NHL. So, no, I don't have a problem with that.
And, you know, the other thing is when he played in the third line. So the argument is, well, look at their first 2 centers before Nugent Hopkins came back on the Monday. And what was he playing with?
Sure.
I mean, nothing great there. So that's the other concern. A bigger concern is you know, no pun intended, is the lack of size there and the lack of an ability to create space for each other. The Oilers are very much overpassing if you watch their games. They are trying to create too much out of nothing. They're turning the puck over a ton at the opposing blue line. They're doing all the cardinal sins of the, you know, most coaches in the National Hockey League. And Devan Dubnyk's been pretty bad. And LaBarbera's not much better. So he isn't better. So that's the other problem. So people, you know, to talk all about the Oilers and what they need. I mean, they're now talking about exploring goaltenders, but we'll see what happens there.
Well, let's talk about the goaltending. You know, sort of a two-part question.
Okay.
One, is goaltending the only thing keeping the Oilers from being a playoff team?
Maybe from being a playoff team through 7 or 8 games, but not from being a really, really good team.
And then secondly, should the Oilers be looking to deal one of their young guys, or should they be waiting until the offseason when the list of unrestricted free agent goaltenders that aren't going to cost you an asset?
Yeah, you're not trading, I'll cut in right there, Drew. You're not trading one of those top young players for a goaltender unless he's a superhero. You know, like you're talking about a Lundqvist, and even then, I don't know, I don't think you're probably doing that.
I don't think New York would be doing that, but I'm talking...
Well, he's going to be UFA, that's what I'm saying.
Right, let's say Ryan Miller. Let's say Ryan Miller would agree to go to Edmonton and he'd sign a contract extension this year without testing free agency in the offseason. Would you trade one of your young guys for Ryan Miller?
No. If you're going to be trading one of those young guys, you need a stud defenseman back or a power forward. More so a stud defenseman.
More so than a goaltender, you're saying?
Yes. I'm not saying they don't need a goaltender, but I'm saying to get a goaltender, I wouldn't do that.
Because if you look at the list of the goaltenders who are UFAs this offseason,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some guys who are at the, you know, towards the later stages of their career.
Some good players, though.
Lundqvist is a UFA.
Mm-hmm.
Miller's a UFA. I mean, if you know, Jonas Hiller, who I think could probably still do it, is a UFA.
Yep.
I mean, Yaroslav Halak's a UFA. Brian Elliott's still a UFA. I mean, there are some guys on that list who, you know, I think could be your answer for at least a few years, better than Dubnyk, while you develop another goaltender.
The other problem with Dubnyk is they didn't challenge him. They brought in LaBarbera, who's not ever going to be a number one, so he knew the number one was his job. It's you know, maybe they needed to do exactly what Dave Nonis did in Toronto.
Reimer and Bernier, and that's turned out to be pretty good for the Leafs so far.
Talk about that in 6 things later on. I mean, maybe you needed a 1A, 1B. Because Dubnyk wasn't just a 1. you know, at most he was a 1A. So if he's a 1A, then who's your 1B? Or if he's a 1B, who's your 1A? Or if they're both 1Bs, you'll take, you know, if you want to do like a 1B kind of Philly thing.
Sure, a Mason
actually,
Emery.
Philly goaltending hasn't been a huge issue in Philly. Can't score.
Right. Second straight year they can't score, but that's a separate issue altogether there in Philly. But, I mean, if you're the Oilers and you're not, you know, one step, one player, one position away from really being a, you know, a contender, the concept of even beginning to think about trading one of your young players just seems so short-sighted to me.
Well, I don't think they're trading any of the young players. The only player I think they would consider dealing, and I'm just speculating, I do not know this at all, it would be Yakupov. The other guys are all signed, Drew.
Can you? I mean, Yakupov was the first overall pick 2 years ago.
But I mean, it wasn't this, you know? Yeah, he was.
If your phone rings,
wasn't the best draft in the world, but yes, he was.
But I mean, if you're Buffalo and your phone rings and it's the Oilers and they're saying we want Miller, we'll give you Yakupov, you don't hang up that phone.
But they're not making that call. I mean, they're making the call and they're asking for a boatload with Miller.
They're asking for Miller
for a pending UFA for sure. Even if Miller was on contract.
I mean, yeah. There's not that many goaltenders in the NHL,
Miller, I mean,
that I wouldn't be thinking hard about acquiring Yakupov for. And if you're the Oilers and you're giving up on a guy that early in his career, that's just...
Not giving up on, depending on what you get back. And I'm not saying they're going to do it, but if they're going to be making deals, Craig McTavish keeps talking about making deals, who you trade it? Well, Hemsky's not going to net you much. We talked about this about 2 weeks ago. Hemsky's not going to net you much. You just traded for Perron. You know what he's going to net you,
mm-hmm.
more or less.
Wouldn't you rather wait and see what you actually give Yakupov another year?
But, Drew, we're looking at that in a vacuum then, because look at the public in Edmonton. How many more years are they going to be able to sell to their fans all of this hope? And at some point, you have to take the practical realities into account. You can't keep going to season ticket holders, not that they won't buy necessarily, because there's a new arena on the horizon, but say, this is our year, we're going to be bold, and then just sit around. If you're going to do that, fine. Just don't come out and say you're going to make huge trades like McTavish did.
Well, I think that might be the problem more than anything. I mean, you know, I know fans are very rose-colored glasses in some respects, but if you look at the Edmonton roster, I don't think anybody can... I mean, I know they got a ton of young talent there, but most honest people wouldn't say this is a, you know, at best, it's a first-round playoff team.
I think one thing's for certain. The goaltending is terrible, and they're going to have to fix that, and... How long are you going to go with this as a problem? Because right now it's the Achilles heel of the team. And I think this can be a playoff team. I think it's a team that's obviously still very young and a team that doesn't have the best defense. They've added Andrew Ferentz, but there's still a lack of, aside from him, leadership. And I like Jeff Petrie's game. And I think, you know, you look at Anton Belov, he's struggled to kind of... Again, he's in his first NHL season, but you're going to have to address it. Now, all of the guys that you've mentioned are going to be difficult to get because these teams know that they can wait longer towards the trade deadline and probably get more. And as far as Yakupov being the young guy that they probably could trade, I'd probably agree with that with Richie. They're not moving Eberle or Hall or Nugent Hopkins. Mm-hmm. At least I would be shocked if they did. I would be shocked if they moved Yakupov, but what are they going to do here? Because Devan Dubnyk, I think... You know, good guy, but he struggled big time. His goals against is pretty high. And Jason LaBarbera, I think at this point in his career, is at most a backup. So it's something that needs to be addressed. And how do they address it? I think MacTee's probably thinking about that all the time these days.
I think I'm saying don't address it mid-season and give up an asset. Address it in the off-season where you can get a guy and all he's going to cost you is some money.
Yeah. Their aspirations in a season where Calgary's supposed to be weak, Vancouver has holes, you know, a season that making the playoffs in that division shouldn't be completely impossible, and it's early, I just don't see them being that patient.
Well, to the victor, somebody might be getting a very young, nice player, and, you know, for whatever cost, and we'll have to wait and see on that. Well, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to do six things we learned this week. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 1 hour to go, Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. This is NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Richard Pollock's over there. Ezra Ginsberg's over there. Michael Remus is over there. You can follow us on Twitter, where we're everywhere.
at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
Six things we learned this week for a Wednesday evening. I'll start with Richard Pollock. Richard, Bruce Boudreau has his team, the Anaheim Ducks, buying into the team concept. They are having fun and success all at once.
You know, the power play hasn't been good. And they have a team that's got players that are primed for power play success and with a lot of room. Solani and Getzlaff and Perry. But if you watch Boudreau, you know, Boudreau, you can complain about whether his teams are defensive enough and whether they can do it, win the big game. And all that, and you know, I certainly am willing to listen to that. But overall, I mean, this team doesn't have the most talent. They're a bit top heavy. Questions on defense. Good goaltending tandem. But he has them. I believe 4-1 right now, playing hockey, having fun, and just watch them. And I think that matters. He picks up Matthew Perreault. Him and Bob Murray pick up Matthew Perreault from Washington. Drop him in the second line. Having a nice season thus far. Again, I understand it's early. But after their season last year, when I think they really should have beat the Red Wings in the first round, surprising season last year, very surprising. Everybody, and including myself, thought this team would take a step back. And so far, they've exhibited once again that they're playing hard for their coach and they're having fun. And nothing better if you're a fan than seeing a team that plays hard and has fun.
Five.
Ezra Ginsberg, Rob Klinkhammer of the Phoenix Coyotes, is one of the early feel-good stories of the year and has become a solid two-way player for Dave Tippett.
It's a great name, too. I think a lot of people have seen his name quite often over the last couple weeks and wondering who the guy was. And I think it's a great story because the guy has almost 400 games of AHL experience. And after kind of bouncing around from Ottawa and now to Phoenix, he's found himself a role there. And I know a lot of people think the Phoenix Coyotes are boring to watch, but he's a perfect Phoenix Coyotes player. He's at the top of the list in hits, and he's picked up 3 goals already early on in the season. And I think it's really nice to see guys, you know, David Desharnais was another guy that was in town, obviously, last night. And he's another guy that had to fight his way through the minor leagues. And I have a lot of respect for those guys. A lot of the time when you don't have an NHL contract, he was signed to a 2-year contract over the summer. A lot of guys will never make it and almost give up and many times decide not to play. So I think it's a great story for him, and he's become a fan favorite there in Phoenix.
Sleeping there, Remus?
No, Remus is texting as usual. Richard Pollock, Randy Carlyle is
The grilled vegetable salad dinner post-show.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Prior to hashtag Leah coming into the picture, you would have had to strap Remus down to a chair to get him to eat a grilled vegetable salad.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there's very little popcorn and or meat in a grilled vegetable salad, let me tell you.
Unbelievable over there.
Richard Pollock, Randy Carlyle is handling his goalie shuffling masterfully in Toronto.
It's not an easy thing to do, balancing egos. And balancing the egos, but at the same time, you know, making sure a player doesn't get too cocky, but making sure a player doesn't get too down. And I thought after the game against the Oilers, when Bernier was in net and the Leafs won in overtime, they really shouldn't have won that game probably, but they won the game nonetheless. He could have come back with Bernier and said, you know, you didn't have a great game, but you won, and that's what I want to go with. How would that have affected James Reimer's confidence? Probably quite, you know, probably negatively. But he dropped Reimer in against the Wild, and people thought, ooh, you know, Bernier's really taking the bull by the horns here. Why are you playing Reimer? What does Reimer do? Goes out, I believe, makes 37 saves, and they win 4-1.
A game they got dominated in terms of, I think the Leafs only had 15 shots that entire game.
But, Drew, it's so hard to do that. And, again, we keep saying, obviously, everything needs to be qualified by the fact that it's early. But take into consideration how hard with a new kind of a team, with some new players, with a new goaltender, a guy challenging your starter from last year to get a game 7 against Boston, and to play all your cards really well so far, it's a reason the Leafs are successful.
Yeah, James Reimer made 36 out of 37 saves yesterday.
Three.
Ezra Ginsberg, a now healthy Steve Downey, is a big part of the Colorado Avalanche's early season success.
Yeah, you're talking about guys that are pests and guys that people don't like to play against. Steve Downey's also had a suspension history dating back to the OHL days, but he's a guy that also has played with Martin St. Louis and Steven Stamkos in Tampa Bay, and he's there on the third line playing with second line playing with Ryan O'Reilly and Matt Duchene, and it's a great line, and he's been doing an awesome job. And you remember last year he only played two games. He had that ACL injury, but Steve Downey's a very good hockey player. He's got a 20-goal season under his belt in the NHL, and he's a huge part of their success right now. Yeah, they've got a lot of talent with Landeskog and Stastny and O'Reilly, but Downey's also a big part of that, and I think he's been really good, and he's provided them with a big spark early in the season.
Two.
Richard Pollock, Matt Cook may be a dirty player, but his ability as a third-line winger make him one of the best off-season additions to the Minnesota Wild.
I don't like him. I don't like his game. I think he's dirty. I know he talks about cleaning it up and going to, you know, tutor Patrick Kaleta and not being a maniac on the ice, and I think that's a bunch of garbage as well. I mean, you know, you don't need to be tutored by Matt Cook in terms of how to play, you know, how to last in the league and all that stuff. Having said all of that, he's a good penalty killer. He can skate. He can pressure the opponent, and I think he's missed in Pittsburgh, and I think he's a very nice addition to a Minnesota team that lost a lot of veterans. They lost Setoguchi, and, you know, on the back end, what Gilbert goes out, and not really a loss, but the idea is, you know, veteran guys in the roster have departed. They got younger, and they filled those spots with guys like Charlie Coyle and Granlund and different guys. But you've added a veteran to the depth line to insulate some of the young players and to provide a nice touch in terms of checking, and I think that's a nice addition to a team, and he can skate, and that whole team can really skate. So kudos to them.
Ezra Ginsberg, Dallas Stars defenseman Sergei Gonchar is still an excellent power play quarterback, but he is just too slow by today's NHL standards.
Richie talked about this in the offseason, and if you look at Sergei Gonchar against the Jets, or if you look at him last night, he lacks the foot speed, and that's a huge problem when he's getting the types of minutes that he's getting. And he's still extremely efficient on the power play, and he was extremely efficient on the power play against the Ottawa Senators last year, but he's just lost that step. And for a guy like that, he's almost limited to a third D pairing role at this point in his career.
Before we go to break, and we're going to bring in Jeremy Rutherford on the other side, we got a couple extra minutes here. Eugene Melnyk was on our sister station in Ottawa, TSN 1200, earlier.
Why is it at the brother station?
I don't know. That's just radio lingo, I think. I'm not sure whoever made that. I don't know why a station is a she.
Remus, you're here all the time. Is there a reason for that?
No.
Remus, is Drew the grandfather host of the show?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I don't know. It's a station. Who cares?
So why is it a sister station, though?
Look, it's you got to sign a female or male thing, like.
But people want to petition against O Canada. Should we be petitioning against sister station?
Might have to start calling it a brother station. We can be trailblazers here.
What about the sibling station, uncle station? We've got a lot of relatives to choose from.
First cousin.
Yeah, I think they're more of a first cousin than a direct sibling.
They're new to the actual.
This is what I would think, because I would think that like Bob and Virgin are like brother and sisters,
yeah.
Right? But the other TSNs are cousins.
Yeah, they're out-of-towners.
Out-of-towners, yeah, there we go.
Did they get invited to the wedding rehearsal and the Friday night dinner
That's
as well?
That's right.
Right.
Anyways, the point I had is Eugene Melnyk, Ottawa Senators owner, was on TSN 1200 earlier today, and he claims that the Ottawa Senators have lost $110 million in the 10 years that he's owned the team. You believe that?
I read extensively about Eugene Melnyk and the money with the team, and I probably would believe that.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. I mean, how much is the value of the... I don't know if I believe it exactly right, but I believe he's probably lost money, fair bit of money. The question is this: how much has the value of the company gone up since he bought it? Of the company being the Senators.
Sure, I get what you're
saying. If it's gone up at $100 million over that 10 years, probably more, then he actually hasn't lost on that investment once he sells.
Sure. That's an interesting point. I never thought about it that way. Has he? Never mind. Let's go to break. When we come back.
Oh, Remus, you're just deciding who's talking now? Whenever Ezzy gets cued, you just play the music?
Oh, I thought you guys were going to break.
Fair enough. We'll go to break. Jeremy Rutherford, St. Louis Post-Dispatch is next. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Little Chili Peppers for you on this Wednesday night?
Well, mid-90s band.
I know it's a mid-90s band, but I mean, we knew Remus wasn't going to play anything different, but aren't you impressed that I knew the song?
What song?
Oh, I have no idea what it's called.
Like my guess.
Oh, yeah, but I knew it was the Red Hot Chili Peppers. That's pretty good for me. It's not bad. Well,
yeah, I'm impressed.
Drew Mandel.
I'm impressed.
I'm applauding myself right now. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. Trying to get a hold of Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch to join us, talk about the Blues ahead of their game here in Winnipeg this coming Friday.
Apparently Magnus Pjarvi is also going to make his debut tomorrow night for the Blues. A guy who they acquired, bigger guy, good skater, but hasn't cracked the lineup yet. That'll just tell you. I'm not the biggest Magnus Pjarvi fan, granted. That'll just tell you how much depth the St. Louis Blues have that he hasn't cracked the roster yet.
He's been healthy scratched this entire time? Wow. Uh-huh. That should tell you all. You're right. That tells you all you need to know about the St. Louis Blues.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Jeremy Rutherford. Jeremy, first of all, I have to apologize to you. I now remember that I promised to text you, give you a heads up, and I forgot to do that.
Oh, it's no problem. No problem. Sorry I missed you guys.
Yeah, no worries. Jeremy, we have to obviously start with what happened last night between the Sharks and the St. Louis Blues. Of course, the talking to start with, at least, on the Max LaPierre hit on Dan Boyle. To your mind, how bad was the hit, and how long do you think he's going to get suspended for?
Well, I think people could look at the hit a couple of different ways, but I'm looking at it like it was a pretty dirty hit. I mean, the result, I think, was probably worse than the hit. I'll agree with that, but nonetheless, it's something that, Max probably should and could have avoided. Dan Boyle, being a smaller guy, and he was a little bit low on the play and facing the board somewhat, and LaPierre came behind him and gave him a pretty good shove, with the numbers right in front of him. So the end result was bad. Dan Boyle hits his jaw area, kind of on the dashboard there, the little lip at the top of the board and the start of the glass, and was knocked unconscious. Talking to Joe Thornton in the locker room after the game, he said he's never seen anything like that, where a guy just, not talking, not responding, not doing anything. So he left on the stretcher, and today, obviously, the league reached out to LaPierre and offered him the in-person hearing, which it looks like it'll be Friday. So pretty dangerous situation overall, guys.
Jeremy, focusing on the hockey itself, and, non-suspension talk, Blues are obviously were cruising 4-0 before last night's game against the San Jose Sharks. If the Sharks are right now probably the best team in hockey, how do you think the Blues measured up, and what do they need to change if they want to get there?
Well, first of all, they measured up really poorly. But I think that hit early in the game kind of changed a lot of things. It seemed like the Blues were on edge. They didn't know how San Jose was going to respond. Were they going to retaliate? And I think the Blues just didn't play well after that. And I don't want to say that, make excuses for the Blues and say because of that they weren't good the rest of the night. They had a chance to recover and play well. But I think that they were sloppy. They were sloppy at all ends of the ice. And the PK, which had been pretty good the first few games, gave up a couple power play goals to San Jose, and it just kind of cruised from there. But I think when you looked at the game going in and one team was 5-0 and another team was 4-0, it certainly didn't live up to the competitive billing that we all anticipated.
Jeremy, Vladimir Tarasenko and Jaden Schwartz have both been off to good starts this year, and they continued from last year. And I think we're starting to see the young future of this team, if we haven't seen it already. How big of an impact have those two guys had this year?
Well, I think pretty big so far. Tarasenko's on a 4-game goal-scoring streak, and Schwartz, while he might not be putting up the same numbers, he's just one of their best dogged players, just always around the puck. And you guys know when the trade was made with Edmonton to send David Perron to the Oilers, they got Magnus Pajarvi back. The main reason for that was to clear up some salary, because they still had Alex Pietrangelo and Chris Stewart to sign. But the other part of that trade was to give Tarasenko and Schwartz more ice time, both 5-on-5 and on the power play. And so they're handing it to him, and so far these guys are taking it.
Do they miss Perron at all, Jeremy?
Well, the big thing was they need to score goals. They got 9 or 10 forwards that they think can score, you know, 10, 15, 20 goals apiece. And when you looked at the trade, you said, hey, there's a guy with potential goal-scoring ability. You know, he's been in the 20s, but maybe Perron's a 30-goal guy, and you just gave him up. So to answer your question, I thought they'd miss him a little more, and perhaps they will. But, you know, they had 19 goals through the first four games at 4-0 start, and they were getting it from a lot of different areas. So would they like to have David Perron on their team? I think they would, but offensively so far they haven't missed him.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're joined by Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Jeremy, obviously the Blues play in Chicago tomorrow night, and then they come to Winnipeg on Friday. And local boy making his return to Winnipeg, Alexander Steen, is off to a hot start with the Blues, 8 points in five games. What's been the secret to his success so far this season?
Hey, he's just playing so well. I mean, yeah, I can't tell you guys anything you haven't heard a thousand times. He's so smart. He works so hard. He just does all the right things. And, you know, you just like when you see a player like him rewarded. And so far in the early going, he's been rewarded. He had a four-point night the other night against the New York Rangers and 8 points through five games, as you mentioned. You know, when he came to St. Louis from Toronto, it was, what kind of player could he be? He was kind of pushed down in Toronto to a lesser role. And when he came to St. Louis, they've given him opportunities in offensive roles, and right now he's on a top line with David Backes and TJ Oshie and just playing really, really well at both ends.
Jeremy, Ken Hitchcock, the coach of the St. Louis Blues, entering his third season with the Blues, and if you look at his, you know, his recent history, that's sort of about the time where he might begin to lose the dressing room or where he begins to run into some trouble. He wears on a team, it seems, with his very demanding style. Why hasn't that happened yet in St. Louis?
Well, I talked to a player about this the other day because I get asked the question a lot, is he starting to wear? And the player told me not any more than any other coach has in the past or would. I mean, are there situations where, you know, it's never enough? The players give all they can and the Hitch or, you know, a coach in any position wants more? Yeah, of course there's going to be times like that. But I specifically asked the player, but is it ever too much over the top? And they said no. So I think it's because he's learned, he's adjusted, he's had good communication with his leadership group. You know, a lot of times the leadership group, which includes David Backes, the captain, obviously, say, hey, coach, you know, we need the day off. Last night was a physical game. And okay, I'll give you the day off and we'll come back tomorrow and do this, this, and that. And they shake on it. So I think there's a good give and take between Ken Hitchcock and these players.
You mentioned Backes, Jeremy. How important is his kind of bounce back thus far in this, the early part of the season?
It's a big part of the Blues' 4-0 start before this loss last night to San Jose. Backes, six goals last year in the shortened season. He didn't get his fourth one until 35 games in. He's already at four. You know what he did? In the past, he lifted a lot of weights in the offseason, didn't skate a lot, waited till about July. This summer, he got going in June, and he started going twice a week. So he says that he feels his legs, he feels the puck. Things are going in the right direction for him early on, and he attributes it to just kind of getting going earlier on the ice this summer.
The Blues have, you know, Jeremy, three goaltenders who, you know, played obviously in the NHL and are probably NHL caliber netminders. Jake Allen's he's played two games down in the AHL, has played well thus far. Again, only two games. But how do you see the goaltending thing working itself out? Do you see the team hanging on to all three of these guys, or do you see a deal happening down the road?
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Jaro's been pretty good. He got pulled last night, but he was really good through the first four games. Jake Allen has a two-year deal. This year is a two-way deal, so he's in Chicago. Next year it's a one-way deal, so he'll be here in St. Louis. Both Brian Elliott and Jaroslav Halak are in the last years of their contract. Only one of them is going to come back, and I guess perhaps there's a chance neither one of them. But the way Jaro's played so far, I think if he continues that throughout the season and can play 60% of the games and, you know, take this team into the playoffs, I think there's a chance that he could come back on an extension. But it looks like Brian Elliott would be the odd man out next year and maybe even before the end of the season. I don't think you can get a lot of a compensation from a Brian Elliott, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was gone before the end of the year and Jake Allen was the backup.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. Our guest is Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch talking about the St. Louis Blues.
Jeremy, you watch this team possibly more than anyone, and we've talked about a lot on the show how good this defense is. Would you say it's the best defense in the NHL?
It's hard to say. The Blues are going to see a pretty good defense in Chicago tomorrow night. So I think it's a top five for sure. You know, depends how you term the word depth, because the Blues have six very good defensemen, I believe, with the Petrangelos and Bollmeisters and Shattenkirks. Leopold has been better than I think some people anticipated because he's kind of bounced around. And then you have Jackman and Polak, who were the top pair just a couple years ago. Now they're the third pair, and they provide that physical element. After that, you have the first-round pick from a few years ago, Ian Cole. He is their seventh guy. But after that, it drops off significantly. So if you're talking about depth in a top six or seven, I think it's top five in the league. But once you get past that seventh spot, if the Blues have any injuries, I think that could be a big Achilles heel going on in the season.
You know, Jeremy, when you look at this team coming in tomorrow night, Friday night into Winnipeg, Jets, obviously, I mean, you haven't seen them probably too closely, but have gotten off to slow starts, and the Blues are likely gearing up for a big game in Chicago tomorrow. What should Jets fans expect out of the Blues in terms of maybe style of play and energy level on Friday night's game when St. Louis is hosted by Winnipeg?
Yeah, I think from this Blues team, you're going to see a team that rolls four lines. I know it's cliche, but these guys really do. First few games of the season, that fourth line, Ryan Reeves might have been getting, and you guys know Ryan, 8 minutes, but the rest of them were getting 11, 12. Hitchcock was really rolling four lines. So I think that's the type of style that you'll see. They come at you. They're a little more offensive this year than they were in the past. A lot of that has to do with Derek Roy. They bring him in, and he's given them like a playmaking aspect that they haven't had. You know, say what you want about Derek Roy the past year bouncing around, but he signed a one-year, $4 million deal, and he's really played well. And, you know, they have, I think, three good balanced lines that can score. We talked about that deep defense, and Yaroslav Halak's been pretty good, although I think the Jets will see Brian Elliott. It looks like Halak will start tomorrow night against Chicago, and I would expect Brian to get his first start second night of back-to-backs in Winnipeg. So we'll see, but I think they have a pretty good team overall, and just seeing if they can right the wrong that happened last night against San Jose.
Jeremy Rutherford covers the St. Louis Blues for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Jeremy, thanks as always for joining us this evening. We'll see you on Friday night.
Okay, talk to you then.
Take care, Jeremy. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Just giving the dog a bone. It's always hard to pick out AC/DC songs because they all start the same.
They're all the exact same.
That concert was the best at the stadium.
And all the choruses are just the song title.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually one of the best concerts, though.
I was supposed to absolutely at Thunderstorm. Remember that? And it was like Dark Skies was the best show. When Angus got up, you were at the show, weren't you?
Yeah, I was like right next to him.
And Angus up.
You were on stage, Remus?
Well, I was my
God,
seats.
You just have. I mean, you're so big, you can go anywhere in this city.
There's actually a DVD of that same like concert tour in Argentina. It's a crazy DVD. Nuts.
AC/DC is huge in Argentina.
They are.
I know.
Huge everywhere.
I was sort of being tongue-in-cheek, but I also wasn't at the same time.
People, listeners at home don't understand that Remus is wearing a Brian Johnson-esque hat right now while he's operating.
That's right.
Welcome back to NHL.
Yeah, that's all they're doing is just saying the same words.
Yeah, every song, man. Have a drink on me, Hell's Bells.
I never thought about that, about all the redundant. No, that's hilarious.
Anyways, welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Thunderstruck really pumped up the crowd at the MTS Center, though. Like, that's the one song that gets people pumped up more than others.
You shook me all night long.
Shouldn't Thunderstruck be like every team's opening song? If not, Jump. I'm not even sure what the Jets opening song is.
It's No Money by Kings of Leon. We've had this discussion.
That's how memorable it is, though.
I actually wanted to bring this up with you guys before we get into this. What do you guys think of the bagpipes? That's a new thing at MTS Center this year.
I don't mind it. I mean, people are, you know, you don't seem to like it.
I like how they have the jet sound effect after, but bagpipes just irritate me.
Like, what happened if Roddy Piper would come out and do the bagpipes?
Yeah, then that's... I go back why I don't like bagpipes. It's a childhood horror story.
What happened?
I tell you what, we have NHL news and notes for this segment, but I'm willing to scrap that to hear about Remus's childhood trauma with bagpipes.
What's the horror story?
It's not a horror story. It's just a kid on my street used to play the bagpipes and march up and down in his driveway, and they were so loud I could hear them through the window of my room while I was on a computer, and just hearing bagpipes for like half hour at least straight, it'll drive you nuts. I had to like take a nap. I couldn't be in my house.
Was that like during the last break between the warm-up and our show, or this is when you were like 12?
No, yeah, I was younger. I was like in high school.
Let's do it.
I'll tell you what, I can't. No, we're done. End the show 25 minutes early. Bring on Jim Rome. I can't match that. Nothing I can say now is going to match that. Can you get the news and notes bumper ready, Remo?
NHL news and notes.
You're doing good tonight, Remus.
Yeah, you are. You're a good sport, Remo.
What? That was a good story.
That was a good story. Yeah, yeah, that
these
was a good
bagpipes,
story.
They were...
I'm surprised you haven't already cued the bagpipe sound effect.
I'm talking. I don't know. I
can't multitask.
Well, I can, but...
He was multitasking earlier. He was watching the baseball game and sleeping.
Yeah, that's true.
I knew the score, and I knew AJ Ellis homered. I knew what I needed to know.
Tim Thomas of the Florida Panthers will be in net tomorrow night as he faces the Boston Bruins for the first time since his return to the NHL. He wouldn't talk to the Boston media before the game. Boston media is in town in Florida today.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it's Tim Thomas's ritual that he'd not talk on game days. Fine, I can accept that. But is he going too far by not talking even today, 2 days before the game? Should he get this over with? Or should he? Is it okay that he's waiting till... Well, he might wait until after the game on tomorrow night on Thursday.
It's a big game for him, and he wants to win the game, and he's probably doing whatever he can. And he's been a little injured too, Drew, so you don't know. You know, is he rehabbing? What's he doing?
Yeah,
so it's
first
a
game in, I think, 6 games he's missed out.
I don't know how many he's missed out, but he's been injured. And so I think to him this is a huge game playing against his former teammates. He's playing in Florida at home. I don't blame him for that. I don't have an issue with that.
Yeah, I think you're right, Richie. I think it is a really big game for him. And he's always had kind of a standoffish relationship with the media dating back to his Boston days. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I'm just repeating what Richie said, but I think that he is just focused on the game and he probably doesn't want to be a distraction. I think a lot of people want to hear him talk to the media, but it's his choice and you can love it or not love it. But I think Tim Thomas does his own thing, right?
Speaking of friends reuniting, the Vancouver Canucks are going to be in Buffalo tomorrow night to play against their old friend Cody Hodgson. Us Manitoba Moose fans, of course, remember his, Cody Hodgson with his time in Winnipeg. His time in Vancouver ended poorly 2 years ago, traded at the trade deadline in exchange to Vancouver in what has turned into a very one-sided trade. His name is escaping. Zach Cassian hasn't developed into what the Canucks had hoped for. You know, Cody Hodgson signed that big contract in this offseason, and he spoke to the media today, yesterday, and he said he denied that his parents had anything to do with his poisonous relationship in Vancouver. You know, knowing what... I don't even know what the question really here it should be here. You know, do you think Cody Hodgson got a bad rap for his time in Vancouver?
Well, I mean, we won't know. He said he'd comment on it later. Who knows when that'll be? But I mean, he said he didn't go to his dad didn't call the team. He wasn't begging to be on the ice more and all that stuff.
Which is what the rumors were. Like Mike Gillis when he traded him because it sort of came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Gillis dealt him, and he said Mike. I think in the press conference right after the trade deadline, he said something to the lines of he spends 70% of his time dealing with Cody Hodgson and Cody Hodgson's problems, whatever those may be.
Well, I mean, the problem is that they went from depth up the middle after that, and I didn't think the trade was going to be turn out as poorly as it has. So, I mean, I'll fully admit that this is a trade that's. You know, Buffalo's a mess. If you watch Buffalo, they're a mess. But it's certainly shaped the Vancouver franchise since that point, and not in a positive way.
Wow, the trade was Hodgson for Zach Cassian and Alex Sulzer. Is that I think that was the other guy that was in.
Well, I believe Sulzer went with Hodgson to Buffalo, and then Marc-Andre Gragnani.
Gragnani
was in the trade as well.
That's right.
But I mean, the core pieces were Cassian and Hodgson, and if you watch the two players, they're really not comparable. There are worlds of difference between those two players.
Well, I mean, in hindsight, being 2020, to deal a young, talented center. And I mean, whatever you think of Cody Hodgson, he certainly is young and talented.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really come into his own in Buffalo. Now, I think he's overpaid, and I think that was a stupid contract R.C. Regier gave him this offseason. But, you'd certainly take 100 Cody Hodgsons before you take 100 Zach Cassians at this point in his career, has he?
I think Cody Hodgson, really, as far as this is the first time hearing Tony Gallagher in the Vancouver Province had the article. This is the first time hearing of a problem with his parents. There's probably some truth to this, and he's doesn't want to probably admit it. It obviously surfaced from somewhere, but I think that he wasn't getting the playing time that he wanted, and really Vancouver, I felt, kind of gave up on him, and now it looks like that hole would be pretty nice with Cody Hodgson there, and he's got tons of offensive talent, scored a lot of junior, and they obviously made the move because they felt that Zach Cassian could have given them more. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that it's pretty lopsided at this point.
Given them more jam, as has been the catchphrase the past week or so around Jets camp, but in reality, given them more physicality and a team that was soft going to make the run, and he hasn't, and never mind the suspensions, he hasn't performed when on the ice with the Sedins, and it's hard to not, the Sedins are pretty easy to play with in terms of puck movement, so that's a concern. He's a big winger, hasn't been able to produce, and it's given them, if you look. Last week, one of the six things I learned this week, I talked about the lack of a third center in Vancouver. That can very well be traced back to that deal.
Sure, because, I mean, they've got Jordan Schrader trying to fill that role, and he hasn't been able to fill it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Another item in NHL news and notes this week here on NHL Midweek. The New Jersey Devils put Ryan Clough on the injured reserve. He's suffering headaches since getting hit with an elbow on Sunday versus Winnipeg.
It's not good.
No. I mean, we all know what that says. I mean, that's, we read between the lines there, and you all know what that injury actually is, and it's a concussion. It's not his first, certainly. He's had a lot of those. I mean, he plays a physical style, and he had some injury troubles in San Jose, if I'm not mistaken.
He had a lot of injury troubles in San Jose, Drew. This is not an injury that I wouldn't expect to see Ryan Clough back in the near future.
Do you remember, I mean, we weren't at Sunday's game. We all had the opportunity to celebrate a friend's wedding. Remus was there. But I don't remember any talk of Ryan Clough getting hit with an elbow on the game on Sunday in Winnipeg.
That's more worrisome.
Yeah, because, I mean,
in the sense that it wasn't as significant as some of the other ones.
Well, it was, by all accounts, it was an incidental play. There was no penalty on it, as far as we know. There was certainly no NHL discipline or anything along those lines.
And that was a concern. His injury history was a concern when they gave him the five-year deal.
Yeah, 5 years, $24.25 million for a guy who, like you said, you never know, might be one hit away. And it's
hopefully not,
but it's certainly something that the Devils have to be concerned about.
Right.
As how does this affect the Devils? I mean, obviously they're not much of a team this year. Now without Clough, they're even less of a team.
I think it's just bad timing. The Devils are obviously winless, and Ryan Clough was signed to that contract and to provide secondary scoring. It's just bad timing, and you hope that it's not serious. We talked about his concussion history, but I don't think there's anything positive to take out of this, but it takes size out of the lineup, and it takes another guy that could possibly put the puck in the net. And, they're having trouble scoring goals right now. Tedenby is going to go into the lineup for Clough. Tedenby struggled
at
various times, and they're struggling right now.
We wrap up news and notes, and it's certainly apropos. The Philadelphia Flyers announced, and not sure why they had to announce this, that Chris Pronger will never play hockey again.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we had all assumed ever since his last NHL game here in Winnipeg a number of years ago. We all know the struggles he's had in coming back from the concussions and everything else since that game here in Winnipeg. Not sure why this was officially publicly announced at this point in time, but...
Well, I mean, it was a Ken Cabell interview, was it not, with Paul Holmgren. So it was one of those things where it kind of leaked out. People have questions as to whether or not it'll affect the salary cap ramifications, and by that I mean that Chris Pronger signed his deal when he was over 35 years old. Therefore, if he gets injured, if he doesn't play throughout the course of his contract, and if he opted to retire, the cap hit would still be against the Philadelphia Flyers. Now, what's happening is he is every year being placed on long-term injury reserve before the season begins, therefore saving the Flyers a big chunk on the cap. Now, people will say, well, if he can clearly not play again, why if they announce that he's not going to play again, how can they keep him on long-term injury reserve?
Why isn't it cap circumvention, you mean?
And the idea being is if Pronger said, I want to play, and I'm still going to try whatever I can to play, whether he is or not, it's his option whether or not he wants to retire.
Sure.
And why would he's working for the team, so a bit of a conflict of interest there, I guess. But I'm sure he's working for free, quote-unquote. And the idea is, you know, unless he retires...
Sure, and Chris Pronger would say to any people who would argue with that,
if I got better tomorrow, I could very well come
back. That's right. You know, if I was healthy, I would still be playing right now. And, I mean, the Flyers don't want him to retire. The Flyers actually need that
of course,
cap room,
yes,
the
of
cap
course.
Space.
Oh, they need. I mean, of course they would. I mean, he's not going to come back and play, but they still have not filled that giant role that he played.
No, and the cap space he provides by going on the long-term injury reserve is huge, and they don't really care because I'm sure that insurance is paying the bulk of that contract. It's not like the Flyers would be on the hook for a salary for a guy who's not actually playing.
Mm-hmm.
So that just sort of ties a bow on the Chris Pronger situation, and more than anything, we all hope that he can get back to having a perfectly normal life. And because, I mean, he's still got a long career ahead of him in the management side. And the
he's a great interview. We should try and get him on.
Oh,
I've heard
terrific.
Him. He's hilarious.
Yeah, he's just dynamite. Anyways, that's it for news and notes for this week. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Richard, you're usually the musical authority on this show. Is Remus allowed to, on Wednesdays, not play Bruce to end the Wednesday show?
Yeah, you know, we give Remus a lot of power and discretion here on the Wednesday show, so I'll let Remo do what he wants to do.
Oh, I thought you guys were trying to differentiate the shows.
Sure, whatever you want.
I can play Bruce. I have it.
No. Bruce can be the last segment in every
Saturday. It can be the Saturday show. That's fine. Yeah.
I got it. It's fine here.
Oh, you got it on the fly.
What happens if it's not a song, not a Bruce song that Richard wants to hear?
There's no such thing, Drew.
Well, I mean, usually...
Is he coming in July? That's the rumor around town. He's coming to the stadium in July.
That's been the rumor. This isn't the first time that rumor has been floating around.
I know. Hey, Remus.
Sorry, I can only change so well.
Fair enough. I'm on fire? That's what you're playing off that?
Look, I'm not a Bruce fan. I just picked a random song off the album.
I mean, like, should we turn on the lights in the studio here?
What do you want me to
play? Should we light a candle?
Well, sorry, I didn't want to play, like, Glory Days because you always make fun of me.
Well, because you play the same three ones up on the
Because I don't know Bruce. I'm not a Bruce
fan. I think that's
a
lesson for next show.
But I've listened to this album, like, Fuse. It's a good album.
It's a good album. It's a good album. It's a legendary album. Let's go to Rapid Fire.
Let's go to Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire for this, what is it, Wednesday? Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290. In his new book, Orr, My Story, Bobby Orr opines that Don Cherry should be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame's builder category for his longtime contribution to the game. Do you think that Don Cherry will one day be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame?
Ooh.
Starting off with a bang.
Yeah, I know. I saw that in the plan. I think he should be.
You read the plan?
Yeah, I did read the plan.
Wow.
I think he should be. Will he be? That's a really good question, Drew. And I've thought about it a number of times today. I think he will be. I mean, think about Don Cherry, you have to understand, is you see Don Cherry on a Saturday night, but that guy is in the youth hockey arenas. The junior hockey arena is basically every day of the week. In his late 70s, his passion for the game, owning a junior team. I certainly think, you know, you can differentiate, you can disagree with his politics and disagree with certain stances, and I can understand that, so be it. But I don't think you can disagree the contribution that he's given in terms of his time and love for the game. And I think that should make him one of the Hall of Famer in the Builders category.
Is he?
Yeah, I'd agree with Richie. I think he does deserve to be in the Hall of Fame.
In Saturday's game between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Pittsburgh Penguins, with the play ongoing, referee Gordy Dwyer helped Steven Stamkos off the ice after Stamkos broke his skate blade. After helping Stamkos to the bench, the player who replaced Stamkos on the ice, Tyler Johnson, assisted on the game-tying Lightning power play goal with 3 minutes to go in regulation. In instances where a player only has an equipment malfunction and not an injury, should an official help a player to the bench in the middle of game action?
I have no problem with this at all. I mean, the guy can't, you know, when your skate blade breaks, is it broken for you before ever?
Yeah, you can't skate.
You can't move on there, and I don't mind.
You're crawling to the ice at the bench at the best.
If they blow the whistle, oh, he's not injured, but his skate blade, why'd they blow the whistle? We could have had a chance to score, like, you know, Pittsburgh might say. So they help him out, and then a guy comes out and then he scores. Come on. I mean, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, what are you supposed to do? I mean, the guy needs to get to the bench, right? I didn't see the play, but I think in that situation, the referee has to do the right thing. And
is the right thing in that instance to help the player?
I think so, Drew. And Stamkos. You want him back in that game as soon as possible. You're paying big money to see these guys.
Should the referee take into account the circumstances?
No, I mean, you don't know, by the way, when he goes to help him, I'm not sure if he knows he's injured or not.
Yeah.
And you could get injured if you skate on your blade. That's the most important part to point out. If you were to push off and then blow a tire and then pull his groin, well, what's everybody going to say?
It's, I'll tell you what, that's exactly what Carey Fraser said
in
his column, Your Call on TSN.ca.
If only I had the hair of Carey Fraser. Remus has a Carey Fraser like a head of hair. I don't have such a thing.
Yeah, well, Remus has more hair than the three of us combined, unfortunately.
It's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Jason Pominville returned to Buffalo, and Mike Harrington, columnist for the Buffalo News, ripped the Buffalo Sabres for not acknowledging his return to the city earlier this week, calling the organization clueless and Dysfunction Junction. Pominville, the Sabres' former captain, was traded to Minnesota last season. Is Harrington right in his criticism of the Sabres, or were the Sabres correct in not acknowledging the returning Pominville?
The population of Pominville, as Rick Jenneret would say. Jason Pominville is a classy player. I think if you look at his stat line, we talked about it 2 weeks ago when we were comparing him and, you know, Wheeler's contract. If you look at Jason Pominville's stat line, you'll be pleasantly surprised at how good he's been and how good he was over the course of his career in Buffalo. On a team that in 2006 was probably the best team in the league, defensive injuries, other injuries didn't really allow them to beat Carolina and then go on to play Edmonton. He was a huge part of a lot of those teams, and I think a guy who puts in that much time into a city certainly deserves some recognition. And I think it's, I don't know if ironic or not, that he scored the winning goal and they won 2-1.
Is he?
As a former captain of the team and a guy who was a huge part of the success when they were having success, unfortunately now they're not, I think he deserved to be acknowledged in some regard, and he wasn't, and it's really unfortunate because Pominville didn't miss a lot of games either, so it's unfortunate that they didn't give him some type of presentation on the video screen. But I guess they had their reasons. I'm not really sure what those reasons are, but I think they deserve to be criticized, absolutely.
That team is struggling right now.
The Sabres should have been doing everything in their power to give their fans anything to cheer about, even if it's a returning player, because that is they're about as bad as you can get in the NHL.
They're in a rebuilding phase right now. There's no doubt about it.
And they hired the wrong coach, too. Ron Rolston doesn't do anything for me.
Well, I don't know, Drew, if it's Ron Rolston is the wrong coach or if they're really, you know, he was dealt one of those hands, like the Randy Cunningworth hand, where... You know, they brought him back the next season, granted, but difficult situation.
Talking about Randy Cunningworth in Montreal.
I mean, that was somewhat a language issue, but also the team was in disarray a bit. There was a management change. Things were going to happen. There hasn't been the management change here, but there's been a change in players and change in strategy. They trade Pominville. You know they're going to rebuild. Mm-hmm. The problem they have is the two guys that they can trade for, that they could trade if they were under contract and rebuild, would be Thomas Vanek and Ryan Miller, both of which are pending UFAs. So how do you rebuild successfully without having a lot of chips to deal?
Sure.
It's a problem. And then, you know, they've rushed a couple of their young players too, which has been an issue. Grigorenko.
Yeah.
They brought up Ristolainen this year. I'd be surprised. I don't know if I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised if they keep him up again and rush another guy.
Well, you remember they actually sent down Grigorenko
later in the year
after he'd already burned a year of his entry-level contract.
Yeah.
This past Sunday, the Anaheim Ducks celebrated their 20th anniversary, defeating the Ottawa Senators 4-1. Sporting throwback jerseys from their inaugural season, many players from the original team were on hand to celebrate the franchise's 20-year history. In celebration that the Ducks have been around for 20 years, who is your favorite player from the inaugural 1993-94 Mighty Ducks of Anaheim?
Gary Volk.
Gary Volk. He's got a nice head of hair.
He does.
Geehee Bear. 100%. I remember...
Bobby Dallas.
Bobby Dallas was good. He played in the Jets, remember? Jets 1.0.
Terry Yake.
Terry Yake. One of our buddies has a Terry Yake jersey.
Come on.
Who?
One of the Walker brothers, our buddies, had a Terry Yake jersey. 38. It's number 38, I think he was.
Is that a bet, or is he like Terry Yake his uncle, or what was going on
there? I don't know whose uncle Terry Yake is, but I think he's number 38 was the is that what it was?
I don't know. I like these rapid-fire questions. We can just rattle off old players.
Yeah, it's great.
That's why I sort of set you guys up for that one.
Yeah, Terry Yake, I think, Remus, you went on that one.
Terry Yake. So I looked at who was there, too. I read about it before.
Well, you used the show time to the best of its abilities.
Were you reading while you were sleeping, too? Like you were listening to the game while you were sleeping?
He said he does multitask. That's it for this Wednesday evening in NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for joining us. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can also get it on tsn1290.ca and on illegalcurve.com. We remind you to follow us on Twitter at @IllegalCurve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve is our Facebook site, and the website with the latest NHL news and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. Saturday afternoon, 12 noon, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Until next Wednesday, where we return with NHL Midweek. For Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We wish you good night and good luck.
Been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.